Hey, everybody, welcome back to Little Things Are Big Things Education Podcast with T-Free and K-Dub. We're excited to have you back here for our Heart Intelligence Week. And, you know, we're gonna look ahead into the idea of heart intelligence and getting our brain waves and our heart waves kind of in line with each other. We're going to talk about following that gut feeling and what's it take to really get you there so that you can kind of be in flow. And, you know, the big idea here really is, you know, when you're in your head, you're dead. And when you're in your heart, you're smart. So let's get to it.
Good. He's coming to you from Bowling Green, Kentucky, where his four energetic retrievers are probably tackling his dad right now, who just came into town as they get ready to take a road trip across the country with 3 years of Challenge Day and 11 years of teaching math as a tutor and in the classroom. T-Free, my best friend and a great teacher.
Whoop, whoop. How's it going, everybody? K-Dub's coming to you live from the Pacific Northwest down in Oregon. He's got 11 years of teaching social studies at the middle school and high school levels, as well as 20 years of athletics, which is going to be a great connection for a lot of the things we're doing this week with you as we roll into heart intelligence. What else you got for us, Dave?
Well, I just want to thank everyone for listening to Little Things Are Big Things Education, brought to you by Peak State Mathematics. Please rate and review us. We need those 5 stars. Please, please give us those reviews and those ratings. We are available on Spotify, Google, YouTube. Tim, what am I missing? Where else are we out and
Stitcher,
about?
Apple Podcast.
We're all over the place. So please find us where you listen to your podcast and give us those reviews. And I got to admit, just real quick off the top, I feel like I got to move around a little bit more. You are, your intros are able to be more exciting because I'm just always in this room.
I mean, I'm it's part of my crazy chaotic lifestyle. Like you just said, right? Like I'm about to go hit a road trip. My dad just flew in from Seattle. Like we literally picked him up, drove him here, grabbed some dinner, and I'm like, all right, podcast, let's go. So, and he is legit sitting on the couch on the other side of this wall getting mauled by all 4 dogs right now. So
That's great. Well, this week we're talking about heart intelligence, which admittedly for those of us who are for those of you who are listening, this was something that Tim kind of introduced me to when we were talking about ideas for a podcast a while back. And I really dove deep on it here in the last week or so to build some understanding of it. So my excitement around this topic is going to be kind of teaching you guys some of the stuff that I've learned and then getting to hear more about how Tim is a much deeper understanding than I do. And then also how Tim is ultimately taking this information and applying it to helping his students.
Right. And I'm actually pumped to see what you learned from it, because I'm going to argue to say that you've taken more of an academic role on it in the last week or so than I probably ever have, which is an interesting conversation itself around this, right? Mm-hmm. The conversation around feeling and emotional and body and heart intelligence, right? Like feeling that kind of universal intelligence piece or your gut feeling. Or, you know, leading with your heart, that idea versus, you know, being very cognitive, making sense of things, rationalizing things. Like those are two different forms of intelligence. And that's what we're going to kind of have a conversation around today. So I think we'll both be able to throw a lot of goodness at this conversation. So
excellent. Where do you want to start off with? You just want to give them like a working man's definition of this thing?
Yeah. So hopefully you guys have listened to Tuesday's episode, our connection activity, right? So at this point, hopefully you've kind of gone through a little bit of a guided meditation with it on how do we even get ourselves into a good heart space? How do we help align our heart waves and our brain waves? But here's kind of the science behind it and how I was introduced to it. You know, again, through some of the different workshops I've gone through and attended, this was one of the topics that got brought up, is this idea of heart intelligence. And science kind of in the recent years has identified and proven that when you are in a space of like gratitude and you are in like a calm state and you have this idea of love and connection and service and you're in like this you're in your heart, right? And you can surround yourself with that gratitude. They actually are noticing that your EKG and your EEG, your heart waves and your brain waves, they will actually start to sync up with each other and be smooth waves. The opposite is true also when you are stressed, you're fearful, you're angry, you're hurt, you're in some of these other, more explosive kind of states, right? If you look at the, your heart and your brain at the same time, they're both very jagged and they do not sync with each other at all. And I'm sure just, if you think back to some of your own experiences in life, you've probably had moments where you've experienced both, right? Like you've probably had an experience where you were stressed out of your mind, you were angry about something, you were upset about something, you were running late. Maybe you got into like a car accident or something. A lot of times they've correlated that, like I forget the stats on it, but some crazy high percentage of car accidents happen when people are in those states and your brain and your heart are not synced together. And you have that moment where you're distracted and you're not in the moment. You're not present with the vehicle. And so you have that car accident. Especially if you ended up being maybe the one at fault for it. And so when we can help eliminate that stress, we can start to get more into, and we both are involved with sports. And so we were talking about the idea of when we're in flow, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you find your free throw shooter that hits 12 free throws in a row at the end of the game clutch, you're like, yeah, that kid was like in it, like you could not mess with them. You could not break that concentration. And a lot of time that's because they found that calmness, they found their flow and that energy is synced together and everything's working in unison. So, the conversation also then kind of spins into this idea that we have a much deeper intelligence and a deeper awareness of what to do and what we want in our lives from our heart. And a lot of times from an unconscious and a subconscious level, we've been taught what to believe and what to think and how to behave and all these things. And so we have, what our brain tells us to do. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that doesn't necessarily line up with who we are as an actual individual, like being. And so, I'm sure you've also experienced this before. Like I know in my life there were moments where I'm like, what am I even doing? And why am I doing it? Right. And so like all of a sudden, like I get out of my head for a moment and I allow myself to really find some calmness and allow myself to truly like think like what makes me happy? What makes me tick? Okay, how can I do that? And like, I start to ask better questions and I ask it from a different space of like, I need to do this. I can't believe I'm like ruining my life. I'm wasting my life. Ah, panic, panic, panic. I'm going to go do this. And then it's not what I actually wanted anyways. And so then I go through the same pattern and I spiral like Tasmanian devil for a while, just wrecking havoc. And then it's like, oh no, I love connecting with kids. I want to travel. I kind of want to like rewrite me as a person in a brand new like setting for a while. Oh, this thing called Challenge Day. That sounds like a great idea, right? Yeah. And it was like an amazing experience for me and allowed a lot of other opportunities to do a lot of this growth before I was even like aware of heart intelligence. Like I was already kind of practicing it.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that stood out to me about the learning of it particularly in the last week or so. Was like a lot of these things that they talk about are things that kind of already make sense on like you said, kind of on a, I don't want to say like on a gut level, but like you can hear what they're talking about in these podcasts, which we'll share with you guys all as like our resources for this week is just like to help you understand the topic. We're just going to share some of the resources that we've used, but like what you're hearing is stuff that like in a moment of, like you said, calm and thoughtful reflection, you'll notice some at bare minimum correlation between things you've been through or experiences that you've shared with other people and what's being talked about in these academic journals and in these TED Talks and things that we use to, or that I use to kind of further my understanding of all of this. What I found most interesting though, was this idea of your heart, like not only being in aligned with your brain. Like you talked about, like the alignment versus unalignment and the jagged and the kind of out of rhythmness. But the concept of the heart, in a way, like essentially telling the brain how to behave, right? And kind of manifesting your behaviors and driving your thoughts, was something that I thought was really interesting. And I don't know why this particular fact was one that I latched onto, but I found it really, as a non, like I don't study biology very closely. I was really, really wowed by the simple fact that your heart is in existence, right? When you're in the womb,
right?
Before your brain is. And the idea around what that means, right? Just like A versus B kind of situation. And then the amount of energy that your heart is responsible for processing throughout your body versus your brain, and really starting to reshape our way of thinking of a heart as more than just a pump, right? It's not just a pump that's sending blood throughout the body, but it's actually communicating something both to your brain and to the rest of your body. But really it's in one sense, it's actually the engine driving the car.
I would argue like 100% yes on that. Right. Yeah. And like, one of the sayings that I remember using was like, as we think about something, those thoughts generate feelings. Right. Mm-hmm. And so as we think, so we feel. And then as we feel, that creates a feeling inside your body, and that feeling eventually puts you into action, right? Either that feeling of, you know, seeking pleasure and I want this, so I will go get this, or that feeling of pain or the perception of pain or potential pain, so we're avoiding it. And so our body does something different. And so those thoughts, you know, make us feel, and then those feelings make us act. But like the piece of it that is actually creating the action and doing all the driving, like you're saying, is the feeling, right? And so if you can tap into your feeling and tap into those meanings, like that can control a lot of the behavior and the action. And so it's like, this tells this what to actually do, right? And trying to filter a lot of the stuff coming in.
Yeah, one of the first things that I immediately thought of when I was listening to these podcasts is something, or in TED Talks, is something that you talked about being a very intentional choice when we did our music podcast. You talked about how on Mondays you specifically choose high energy music to push you through that sense of like, it's Monday, I'm tired, like that case of the Mondays that people right. like literally write songs about. But the thought that I had was, I was wondering if like the chicken and egg part of that for you, because even as I was thinking about that connection to our own podcast that you had, I've also noticed more recently, like as I listen to certain types of music, like I'm actually more aware of like the way my heart rate changes based on different music that I'm listening to. And so that was where that connection came from. And so I'm wondering for you, did the music choice come because of the heart intelligence studies that you've done? Is that kind of like a random connection that maybe happened without you being cognitively aware of it? Or what's your thought process on that?
I haven't specifically thought about that. So great question. I think for me, this is one of those where the heart intelligence just made sense, because I think I was already practicing it, right? And I think it was one of those where like, I know, for me, at least personally, music is a controller of how I feel. And so I knew that if I put something that was more upbeat, more energetic, something that activated me to be more movement oriented and less sedated, I was going to be more alert. I was going to be more ready to go. And so, yes, I was very intentional about music choices there, because I know that if I play low key music, I'm going to be low key. If I play upbeat music, like I've got no other choice than to be upbeat.
That's interesting. And actually, even as you were talking, I'm remembering a conscious decision that I had forgotten about that I made. My classes today are type in, because we're still fully remote. On Thursdays and Fridays, I have them respond to a question in the chat, and they all just type it in to kind of get things started. And I had them answer the question, like, what do you do to like shift your energy if you're noticing that like you're feeling tired or like run down or whatever? And I was expecting things like, I drink a Red Bull, I have coffee, you know, I do this. And I got music, yoga, or some form of exercise, like as the overwhelming majority of the answers for my students, which kind of connects to that same idea that you were just talking about of how the music kind of pushes you to get more movement based and be more uplifted. I was, as you were saying that, noticing like, hey, my students said the same thing about how they shift their own energy today in the chat. So I don't want to say it's universal, right? That's all anecdotal evidence. But I do think that the reason this heart intelligence stuff made sense to me as I was learning about it was there are so many things that I can point to in my own experiences that connect back to this idea that they're explaining.
Right. And I also love that in beyond the music, they were saying things like exercise. Right. And I mean, I'd argue to say that some of the music is directly in line with the same reason why exercise works is if you play the right song, it makes you move your body. If you do the right exercise or yoga, whatever, it makes you move your body. And I mean, we do know that one of the fastest ways to shift our state is our physiology. Get your body moving, right? Like if I sit like this and I'm like, Dave, let's have a really good podcast today. Like I'm so pumped up today, right? Versus, you know, both you and I naturally, we sit, our shoulders are back a little bit more, we're up, our heads are up a little bit, right? Like our physiology is different. And if we need it, like we start hitting, we start clapping, we start getting into it, and we're like, yeah, let's go. Like if you ever sat on the sideline in the fourth quarter down by 3 points and you're driving and you sat on the sideline like this, because you were cold, I'd be like, Dave, you're going to lose. I know you are going to lose. But that's not how you coach. That's why we get along, right? Like we both are in there like our athletes feel our energy from the sideline. And I mean, that's a different conversation, but I believe in shared energy as well, right? Mm-hmm. We are part of the field and they can feel us. And I think they thrive with that, right? I think that's part of the reason you and I were so successful with that eighth grade team in specific.
Yeah, and I mean, to connect back to the science stuff too, like they are looking at evidence of, I think the term they use was like global intel, like the globalness of like a group of people in the room with the same energy, like yeah, having an impact on what, on like how that impacts things is very much what you're talking about. I just butchered the hell out of the language, but that's okay. But they are like researching that and finding evidence to suggest that there is like scientific data that backs the idea that if you have even people that aren't in the same shared space, right? Like you can have like a national consciousness of like response to a like traumatic weather event or a pandemic maybe, and how that can push people to be in a certain space versus another certain space, and how all of those things are connected. I didn't go as far down that path, one, because the research seemed really new and it didn't seem like it was, I mean, they were speaking from a place of conclusiveness that is normal, but it felt like they had some, it felt like, at least for me, in the first few things I listened to, it was like, that's interesting. Again, I'm feeling my own connection. I was thinking of sideline things like you were talking about, where I felt like that's true and like in a small space, but I wasn't sure about like the beyond, like the shared space situation. It's at the tangent. I think
it's a great tangent though, right? Like, and yeah. I would almost challenge you and listeners that if you want to play with this a little bit, like get your entire class, 30 students, right? Or however many you got with you to like actually like breathe into your heart for a bit, right? And maybe do some of the meditation that we've done in the past or the one that we have from Tuesday, and like literally get into your heart space and then actually do some of what you were talking about, where like we actually trying to like share that energy and like put it into a specific place. And like, if you, even if it's a selfish thing, right? Just like you be like, hey, I'm having a rough day today. Can you all just like send me some love for like 60 seconds? Like you will actually feel it. Like it's incredible. And like I've seen, it feels very woo-woo-y, and at first I didn't believe it, but like I've literally seen like people like heal other people with their hands, right? Like energy type healing. And it's a fascinating thing, and it's new and it's gaining more traction, and I'm excited to see where it goes. And I think heart intelligence is a piece of that, because part of that is that we know more than we know. You know, like our brain comprehends and has limits to it because we've set our boundaries, mm-hmm. where I think our heart with that universal intelligence idea is more limitless, and we have more understanding than a lot of times we're even aware of. And so you can be in a space where maybe you don't really know what to do, right? And I think this is the confidence conversation you and I have had before too, where like I can be in a situation at this point in my life and I know I will figure it out. I don't know where I'm going to get that information from. And more times than not, I am able to find that answer quicker if I get out of my head and into my heart.
I actually had an experience just like that this week. I'm gonna hopefully not put too many people on blast here that are listening to the podcast potentially that are friends and colleagues. We had a very extra explosive staff meeting this past week. We are getting ready to make the transition to hybrid learning, and we still don't have a lot of information. And at the same time that they were telling us what they did know about hybrid and some of the things that they want us to be doing to get ready for that, they were also talking about end of the quarter grades and creating these class completion contracts for kids who might not pass and things like that, that all make a lot of sense. And the content of the PD is actually not what the issue was. For me, what happened was we had 85 engaged and highly invested teachers participating in the chat while someone was talking and trying to give us new information. And for me, like, I could not process both of those things. And it was welcoming when I was sharing with someone like, well, yeah, actually your brain can't process reading while listening at the same time, because that's technically the same function and one's going to block the other. So it was nice to know that, like, yeah, that's fair that I wasn't able to do both of those things. But like, I was getting, and other people that I know were like getting really frustrated at like trying to keep track of both. And I ended up like leaving that staff meeting, like basically just angry, like right in the, like a sense of confusion and frustration. And like, why the hell did this happen? And I couldn't figure out, like, I couldn't even think about a solution. But when I took some time away from that and literally stopped thinking about it for a little while, within like 24 hours by the next day, I was like, oh, if we just did these three things when we're doing a staff meeting, we would not have to have these issues. Right. And to be fair to the people who are leading those meetings, I mean, how many of us have ever run a Zoom class with 85 highly engaged, highly invested participants? Because my chat is never that busy, right? I think my students are pretty engaged, but they're not that. there's not a comment a second and an answer a second popping up on the screen like it was. And so just like you're saying, taking that moment to get out of that actual space where you are out of rhythm, where I really like that term flow that you keep using. I think that's a really good one. When you're out of that flow, you're not going to be able to operate from a place of like optimum solutions or decision-making in general, right? Like you're in an agitated state. And so you're not going to be at your best.
Right. And I can't remember if we've talked about this before, but one of the analogies I know, I think that both you and I saw back in North Shore School District was that idea that anytime like we're in a stress state, especially the youth, like they flip their lid.
Yep.
And you cannot have a conversation with them or get anything into their brain until they have finally calmed down and mm-hmm. come back to a level-headed space. Yep. And I think part of that is because when they have flipped, they're 100% on like survival mode mm-hmm. and they're strictly in their brain, which our brain is designed to keep us alive, right? Like our old animal instincts keep us alive. Yep. And so you need to calm back down, which brings you back into your space of more centered, right? And like any type of conversation around being centered, right, is to like bring yourself back to your core, which usually is your heart. So Yeah,
that's a really good, I can't believe I forgot about that, because I actually still use that term. Like I'll even in conversation sometimes with people who have not benefited from working with Jody McVitie or being in North Shore School District, right? Like when I would say that at Canyon Park, people would know what I meant. But like, I'll even say to my wife, like if we're getting ready to like, things are getting agitated, maybe like, I'll be like, my lid's flipped. Like right now is not a good time to have this conversation because I'm not in the right space for it. And just watching you, for anyone who's actually like watching the video of our podcast here, right? Tim talked about the lid flip and he put his hand up and he put it back down. I would almost invert that. And like the idea of a lid flip, like shutting off the connection between your brain and your heart is how I'm thinking about it now.
Just, oh yeah. I like that.
Just watching you talk about it and still having that language that I'm used to. It's like having your lid flip means that like you've flipped your lid to the point that your brain and your heart are no longer connected. And so you're in that state of agitation, and you're totally right. We learned so much about how it's harder for kids to recalibrate, right? For multiple reasons, because of teenage physiology. But like when that happens, whether you're 2, 20, or 50, you're not going to be able to respond productively to any information that you're being given or any prompts that you're being given, right? It's just like time and space.
Right. Right. What was interesting is you were talking there too, something else that popped up in my head, and I do it very unconsciously at this point, but in that moment, I was conscious I was still doing it. And I'm going to mess up the actual terminology on this because I'm still learning in my own meditative practices and all that kind of stuff, right? But there's the one thing that like disconnects your body from creating a true circuit flow so that you're mm-hmm. like connected all the way through is between your tongue and the roof of your mouth. And so I remember when we were being taught, you know, some of our mindfulness and like being able to create that from the head through the heart. And that's the twin hearts meditation. I think we actually have done it earlier in the podcast as well. Yeah, is you know, from the brain to the heart. Like those are our two sources of intelligence, which is exactly what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. But to create that connection, you have to put your tongue to the roof of your mouth. And so I have made it into a very intentional practice when I'm listening to people that if I'm waiting to talk, a lot of times my tongue falls off the roof of my mouth and I don't actually process things very well because I want to talk. And when I talk, my tongue's off the roof of my mouth, right? Mm. Versus if I can sit and get the roof of my mouth connected with my tongue, I personally at least tend to process and let it kind of circulate through my body better. So I think that's another, just one of those pieces for people that are kind of intro here and people who are probably way beyond where we're at. Throw us some comments and give us some other tips and tricks.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to get some more resources. So to kind of take us in a different direction, one of the other thinkings that I had as I was processing this information in the last week, really in particular, was, this is a place where I know we've tried to keep focus on the classroom, even though we've both coached in the past. I feel like coaches have perhaps unintentionally kind of gotten ahead of teachers in this regard, in terms of being able to keep our heart and our head centered. And so I'm wondering, as someone who has had more time to think about this than I have, I'm going to throw something at you, and I'm interested to get your response on the other end of it. We talk a lot in sports about like the practice player versus like a gamer, right? And like you were talking about the kid who hits the free throws at the end of the game. I live in Portland. I immediately thought of Dame Time and the fact that we have an MVP who always hits the clutch shots at the end of games, right? Like there. And then I've also had plenty of athletes who were phenomenal in practice, right? They made all the right reads. They took all the right footwork. Like everything looked perfect. You get them into a game and you're just like, who is this kid, right? Like, where is this coming from? And so as I was listening to these podcasts, I was thinking about that idea of like when you're in a sporting event, you have an opportunity for there to be, there's so many different things that could cause you to be out of alignment or for your lid to flip, to continue to use that language. And it reminded me, at the same time that I was doing this research, I wish I could give credit, but I don't want to pull my phone up while I'm talking. There was a basketball player from the University of Oregon. She's a pretty high level player. And I think she'd posted about this last season and was like reposting it again now during March Madness, which maybe is something that we could get into with the idea of lid flipping as well. And she was just talking about performance anxiety and how that can impact an athlete. And that's what I was thinking of with coaches. Like, we have learned, okay, in order to best prepare my athlete to be successful on game day, I need to make practice as game-like as possible. I mean, that is like one of the top probably three or four coachisms that you will hear. Anytime you go to anything to learn about coaching, you will hear make practice like the game, or make – do everything you can to make those things the same. And sometimes it's just as much as creating that same level of stress that happens in a game in a practice. And I'm wondering if that makes sense to you from the same idea of the heart intelligence versus cognitive intelligence.
I think so for sure, right? Because one of the things that makes the jagged, you know, EKG and EEG is this idea that when you introduce stress and fear, anxiety into the situation, that's when everything goes whack, right? And when we're when we're calm, when we're grateful, when we're appreciative, we smooth those curves out. And so if you know that there's a lot of pressure on the game, or to connect it to the classroom, there's a lot of pressure on the test, right? And I have been practicing the entire time in class with my headphones on or music, and I'm just chilling and I'm relaxing and I'm in my flow and I understand it, and the teacher's being very relaxed with me and they're being an excellent, you know, support, and they're guiding me, but they're letting me explore, you know, we're doing all the right things. And I'm in this state, and then you yank me out of it. I'm not allowed my headphones anymore. I can't use my calculator. If I look at my classmate wrong, I'm being told, hey, stop looking at your neighbor. You know, like all that anxiety shows up, and what was a nice, calm learning environment through the practice turns into jagged, holy crap, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm like, no, you do know what you're doing. You got to get yourself into a similar spot. And, you know, I'm not going to say like go encourage your students to use, you know, an open note test all the time or let them have headphones or, you know, it's still your classroom. It is what it is. But I do believe there's a lot of value in simulating what you want them to be good at, you know, during practice. Right. So if it's the game, yeah, make practice very game like. If it's the test, make work time every once in a while be the exact same as what the test feels like, so that when they get into a test time, they don't panic and go to a different state because they don't learn, right?
Well, it's kind of funny that you bring that up, right? Because when I was in North Shore, the social studies department, we had these things called classroom-based assessments. We just called them CBAs, where it was like the one time every year where they were going to be forced to do a particular type of task, which was like evidence-based, like read an article and then answer some questions on it. But you have to use evidence from the text, right? Like, can you use evidence to support your thinking? And like the format for that, because it was a district assessment, like there were rules around like how far apart the desks were, like talking headphones, like you're talking about. And to your point, right? Like generally the atmosphere in my classroom is much looser than that, right? Like music is already on. You're allowed to listen to your own music. You're allowed to chat while you work, like kind of like free flowing situation. But for the test, that wasn't allowed, right? And so what was interesting as a coach, I just brought into, okay, I'm hearing that there's like this high anxiety, high pressure test that's really important for my students because it goes on their record, you know. Technically, it goes on my record. I don't really care, but like it's going on my record. So like I intentionally, we did two practices in like the 2 months before, maybe a little bit less than that sometimes. In the 2 months before we had to do the actual CBA, like the paperwork looked the exact same. Like I intentionally, like classroom same, paperwork same. Like let's do this twice as like a dry run and then go through like also the content of how to correct what we made mistakes from. But how intentional we were with that practice, we saw that my gen ed students performed as well or better than the quote unquote honor students in our school, because we had a very different practice scenario than the honor students did.
I mean, I 100% believe that. And I love that. And I think all of us can relate to something similar to that, right? Where we know when we eliminate the variables that create the stress and anxiety, we can reduce the chance of panic and we can increase the likeliness of success, or at least reaching our maximum potential, right? Like maybe I'm still not going to hit the bar, you know, the standard or whatever, because I just haven't gotten there as a student or whatever. But I'm much more likely to get there if I don't have all the other stressors that are putting me into a shutdown mode before I even start.
Yeah, it was kind of, that's 100%. And that was one of the connections I was making with that idea of like, I think by no, well, I don't want to say by no, but like there's something about being a coach that has made this connection I have not as much in my classroom. I know I just gave an example of me doing that, but that's literally the only example I can think of where I've made that intentional practice of like making things game-like. Part of that is it's social studies and there's not too many like things that are completely replicable. We do a lot of project-based stuff instead, but like that is not something that I see a lot of in the classroom where you're making that connection to, okay, I'm going to put you into this high stress environment, but before I do that, let's practice being in that high stress environment before we have to perform the task. Like I think about like, do you guys take the SBAC at your school?
I've heard of it, but I don't think it's something we do. We do a K-prep.
Yeah, it might be different from state to state. I don't even keep track. So we don't do it at the school I'm at. We did it at Canyon Park, but a really good example of what you're talking about, we had, I hope I don't say the wrong name, Morgan.
Yes.
On last week, and she was talking about the ELL students that had to be pulled out and take this test on a computer, right? And all of the anxiety around doing that. And then me just wondering right now as we're talking, what if they just did that once a week and you didn't even tell them which score you were going to use, and then you randomly just pulled like the average of their scores rather than like telling them, hey, this is the one time this year that we're going to check your languages, and if you don't do well, we have these consequences to deal with.
Right. You're never going to graduate.
Once a week might be too much, but like that idea of like, what if it was more normalized with it? You know, I bet the performance would be better.
I totally agree. And like, even just kind of reflecting on just because it's been such a crazy year, like in my own classes, I try to simulate the high intensity. And I also know that there's so much anxiety in all of my students when they show up to school, period, that I'm like, I'm going to just let them have a moment to like unleash all their chaos and still try to teach, you know? But when I get into test mode, I'm like, yo, like you can't just be chaos right now. Like I need you to settle in for a moment. And I'm like, oh, we haven't practiced this. So like, of course that makes sense. So, but yeah. And then to the heart intelligence side of it, right? Like, can I get my students who are stressing out, are in an anxiety mode, can I get them in that moment to recognize it and instead of shutting down, taking a couple breaths and calming down and then getting back into their heart? And like, I try to have those conversations with my students, right? I'm like, yo, like, you know it. Like, you've been in class. I know you've absorbed it. Like, you've been up on the board. You've done it with me. You're just stressed for a moment. You know, like bring yourself back to like a space where you are not stressed and, you know, chill out for a moment and, you know, think if this was me doing it on the board with you, what would you do? Oh, well, I would probably do this. Okay, cool. What would you do next? Right. And like break it down and be like, okay, no, you do know this. Get back in your rhythm, start slow and then get back into flow. Right. So.
Well, I know that you touched on this on Tuesday with our connections activity, but for just in case anybody missed it and hasn't had a chance or doesn't have time to go back on it or won't for a minute, you touched on something about like how you like the language you use to get students back into that space. And that was the one part that I didn't spend as much time on my deep dive on was the actual practice of like what does get that heart other than the time and space, which creates like a natural kind of default mode of getting away from that lid flippage. But you had like some specific cues to help get their heart and their brain aligned. Can you repeat those real quick for us?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest one, right, is gratitude. Like mm-hmm. it's really hard to be angry when you're grateful. it's really hard to be fearful when you're courageous. Right. Like, so you almost like try to think of the opposing feeling that is creating the stress and the spikes and the jaggedness and the oh my goshness. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, like I've got this, you know, like I've got, you know, bring yourself into a space of courage or, you know, like confidence. And, you know, if you got to do your Superman pose or whatever, right. Like shift your physiology and, you know, and then one of the biggest things, right, is to actually literally breathe back into your heart and actually like put intentionality there. Because if I say like one of the other phrases I've heard a lot is like when you're in your head, you're dead. Right. Like mm-hmm. if we live just in our head space, we're going to make the wrong decision. It's what happens. It's like we instinct. Yeah. Like we react instead of respond a lot of times. And so if I can take that moment and just and like breathe beyond the brain, and like let it sit there, hold it in there for a moment, even like a hand on the heart, right? Like you're really able to put your intentions there. And it's like, okay, I get an opportunity to be here at school today. You know, like I've got the opportunity to show my learning and show my understanding. You know, I'm grateful for, you know, the ability to learn and comprehend and to absorb this information, you know, and if we can just shift our focus and our language a little bit and shift it to gratitude, shift it to courage, shift it to, presence almost, right? Mm-hmm. And again, it's helping us move that thought process downwards until we end up in a space that just, oh yeah, I do know what I'm doing. Okay, let's go from here. You know, and just even in that moment, right? Like I can feel myself energetically shifting, right? Mm-hmm. And this was something I practiced actually a lot in challenging. And again, a lot of this happened before I was even remotely close to aware of what heart intelligence was.
Yeah.
Is the when I get excited, right? Like I talk fast and I talk with my hands and I get all into my space. And it's like, sometimes what I need to speak to needs to actually land and I need to let it pause. And you know, I'm sure if I listened back on our podcast, there'd be moments where I'm like, oh my gosh, I got so excited. Nobody even heard what I was trying to talk about there. Right? And so if I can do a better job of reminding myself, okay, you're excited. You get the opportunity to share this. Make sure people have an opportunity to hear this. You know, like, okay, I'm a messenger. I'm in service mode. Like, let's go. Like, just allow it to be in a better spot and not so high strung and bouncy, you know? So smooth myself out a little bit.
That makes a ton of sense. And that connects back to that, the connection from Tuesday. You made a statement about the line, if you're in your head, you're dead.
Yeah.
Which reminded me of what I was going to talk about for story time. Do you think we're ready for that? Or should I press?
Yeah. And I'll give you just before you jump in there, because the follow up to that, right? If you're in your head, you're dead. If you're in your heart, you're smart.
That's the
follow-up tag to that a lot of times, right? And so it ties right back into the idea that like we know more than we think we know when we sit in our heart. And this is very true specifically when you have like a hard decision to make and you've been putting it off because you don't know what to do. Like mm-hmm. if you actually let yourself sit in it and you truly feel it, I think that's where you're going to find it. And I think this actually sets up perfect to go into what you're going to talk about. So let's hit story time.
Quick interruption here, folks, to talk about littlebiged.com, where you can find all of the amazing resources that we have been gathering for you this week in particular. Because we are talking about something that may be unfamiliar to you, we are going to share a list of resources on heart intelligence that will help you get to at least the same place that we are with our understanding of this concept. And we would also love for you to share some back. If this is something that you've already done some own reflection and research on, we would love to learn more about this along with our audience. All right. So story time this time is not a story of success. This is a very clear example of what happens when you're ignoring what I think a lot of us refer to as like our gut feelings. And we're using our rational thought processes to make a decision. So I'm going to just provide a short bit of background. Last March, literally on the day that schools shut down, I was introduced as a new head football coach at a high school out in, or I'll go ahead and name it Barlow High School or Sam Barlow High School to be totally accurate. And it was basically like the dream job, like the forever job, or like great community, loves its football team, all of the things that are in place to kind of replicate what we grew up with at Bothell, right? Where the football team is important. And when you get the right group of players, you're going to compete for a state title. And on the off years, you're going to, you know, compete for a conference title. So get that job, really excited about it. A lot of great things going on with that. Pandemic strikes, all of us are kind of trying to figure out what to do. Our district, along with many other districts, is making decisions about what exactly we're allowed to do with our athletes and what we're not allowed to do with our athletes. And one of the things that we were not allowed to do was have in-person practice, right? So we were like literally doing workouts on Zoom where we had like one coach modeling different kinds of push-ups and different body movements, and we were all on there together. But as things moved on, it became clear that some people were doing 7-on-7. And there were, when our season got canceled, there was all these new rules about what we could do during that time. And so there are things that I'm still frustrated by, what, like how it resulted. Ultimately, I lost that job, right? Like without ever coaching the team in a game. And I am still in a place where there's still a frustration with how the district chose to respond to the mistakes that I made. But like, I also made some mistakes. And so here's where those mistakes came from. We were trying to figure out a way for our players to still have access to football activities that was both productive from a being together standpoint, but also like learning what we needed them to learn, because we're installing a new offense, in particular with a new coach in charge. And so after hearing what some of the opportunities were, I started rationalizing, okay, we can do this thing and this thing. And if we don't do this, we're going to fall behind these other teams in our conference who are already playing 7-on-7. And if we don't do that, like, oh my God, we're setting ourselves up for success. And if we have a bad first season when I'm there, like, no, like, so like all of this brain activity. But the entire time I was doing that, like in my heart or like in my gut, I was like, this doesn't really make sense to try and get a bunch of football players together in the middle of a pandemic. And it was, even though like I know other people are doing it, I know some people who are listening to this podcast right now are going to tell me like, you didn't do anything wrong, there was no problem. But like ultimately, like I was taking the pandemic, and still do take the pandemic, very seriously. And so there was a part of me that's like, why am I doing this? Because this is not in alignment with how I feel about what I should be doing right now. Mm-hmm. But I made those decisions because I was rationalizing the choices, right? In my brain, I was saying, well, if we don't do this, we're going to fall behind. If we do it this way, it'll still be safe. If we do it this way, we're still following the guide, like the technicalities of the guidelines, maybe not the spirit of the guidelines, but like the technicality of the guidelines that were set into place. And so we do all that. District finds out what we're doing, says you're not supposed to be doing these things, you can't be the coach anymore. And the, you know, a lot of people got really upset, which I was appreciative of, because it meant that they appreciated what I was doing before I made these mistakes. But also I didn't raise like a total hissy fit and really fight it, because like I knew in my gut, and my wife had even pointed out to me, like, what are you doing? And I kept rationalizing. So I just point out, right, like we are all capable of forgetting these things, or even when we know about them, we forget them. When we don't know about them, we're even more at risk of making these mistakes. That's why I was grateful to do this deep dive this week. And this decision-making kept kind of coming back to my head as like a really good example of what happens when you're using your noggin instead of your heart, and not really focusing on what you can feel, right? You can like you said, like you can legitimately feel whether or not this is the right thing to be doing. And I can, right. You know, I was kind of ignoring that in pursuit of what I thought was the right thing to be doing.
Right. Right. I love one, your vulnerability to share that story. And I'm hopeful that our students are starting to listen to this. Like I know I share it with some of my kids and they're like, wait, what? And so like, I want them to hear what you just shared, like really let it land, that when you are in a situation with peer pressure, like people from the outside saying, hey, you can do this, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Your gut says this is not in my, like in alignment with who I am, this is not what I feel. You don't have to execute it, right? Like you can actually listen to your true core being and be true to you. And know that that's going to be an okay thing. And I also think, and I'm excited to see what you do next, because I know you're going to bounce back. And I know that because of this experience, you're going to be more aware of sitting in that space, and you're going to become 100 times more creative in a solution that is in alignment with who you are and the spirit of the things that are in place, right? And so, yeah, I'm stoked for you, and I'm just so thankful that your students get to experience you in general, and everybody who listens to this gets to see firsthand like the power of following your gut and the consequences of ignoring that gut feeling, right? And so I just appreciate you sharing that. So
yeah, man, thanks for the positive feedback and the belief in the future. I think like your point, particularly to our students on that idea of connection, right, is listen to your gut feeling. If it doesn't feel right, you know, like last shout out, like it feels like we shout him out on a regular, but like Coach Banner, right? Like the do right rule, right? Like you just, sometimes you know what the right thing to do is, and you just have to make the conscious decision to do that, even if it's going to be hard. And that was a really good example of where I was not doing that. And, you know, sometimes the consequences are worse than you think they should be, or not what you want them to be. But I think just being aware of that and moving forward and understanding that. The other thing that I will add to that, when I've made mistakes where I trusted my gut and it didn't work out, I always feel better about that than when I make a mistake that resulted from not trusting my gut, right? Like, because there are times when there are negative consequences. Like, you follow your gut and it doesn't work out. Like, I don't want to lie to people and just like, oh, if you just trust your gut, it'll always work out in the end. Like, there will be, there's still going to be obstacles. There's still going to be difficulties. I think that the main difference is where it's going to hit you. And the thing that was hard about what hit with the Barlow thing was like, I knew I was out of alignment with where I was at. And that's what made it essentially impossible for me to fight with the district, right? Like, I was definitely angry with the decision from the district to fire me instead of some other like lesser punishment. And at the end of the day, I was more angry with myself because I knew I'd done something that wasn't in alignment with what I was feeling. And like, that's a harder thing to swallow than somebody else telling you you're wrong, right? That's always going to hit harder when you know you're wrong versus somebody else telling you you're wrong. So,
right. Well, thanks, dude. Appreciate it. And as always, thank you everybody for jumping in and joining us. You know, keep yourself in a peak state, stay in your heart. And we're excited to continue this journey with you. We'll see you all next week.
Make it a great day. Thanks, guys.